The Italian writer Luigi Barzini wrote a wonderful book on the Italians. There's a wonderful story that he tells about the history of Italy in the Middle Ages, that the Italians made the most beautiful armor in the world. I mean, every inch of it was filigree designed and hand beaten. You look at these things and they're incredibly gorgeous, and you can see the detail and the workmanship that's gone into them. Of course, as Barzini pointed out, the Italians would never wear that armor into battle. They would wear German armor because it was safer.
I love this story because it captures something I think of as fundamental about Italian style. Not that it's superficial, but that beauty matters above all else, above even function. That's a bit of an exaggeration when it comes to Italian clothing, especially the tailored kind, but still, how it looks is often ranked higher than how it works. And that's something that Bruce Boyer has experienced firsthand, because he's been traveling to Italy and visiting its craftspeople for almost 50 years. This is Unbuttoned, G. Bruce Boyer's Life in Clothes, Chapter 3. Unbuttoned is brought to you by Shibumi Firenze. We've talked about their ties and accessories on previous episodes, but Shibumi also offers a range of classic shirts, including polos and button-downs.
I think he's got a great eye for classic haberdashery, and I'll tell you something, too. He knows quality. I've seen the quality of the shirts that he does, and I'll probably drop a little money on shirts one of these days with him.
Discover everything on offer at shibumi-firenze.com. Use the offer code UNBUTTONED for 10% off. In this episode, we're going to be traveling to the reigning capital of glamour and style, Italy. I'm Pedro Mendez, and I only visited Italy for the first time a few years ago. Since then, I've been fortunate enough to return several times, traveling to Milan, Florence, Bologna, Naples. I don't say that to brag, just to say that I've seen and met my fair share of traditional artisans. But I couldn't help feel that the glory days, the golden age of Italian style, was in the past. Not only did Bruce experience those glory days firsthand, he was around when the whole Made in Italy brand was born.
I remember one year, 1958, maybe 59, when Brioni introduced here summer dinner jackets, which about as far as we went with summer dinner jackets was the regular black and then a white or a cream colored. And some of the more adventurous country club types would do one in Madras or something like that. But that was just a little outre, you know. But Brioni showed a line of dinner jackets in silk shantung. So that was wild, first of all. But the colors, they showed them in a champagne color, in an emerald green, in a kind of rust color, in a crimson, in a silver. The first thought was that everybody was on drugs or something. I mean, it was just brilliant, but it took hold. You know, I loved it. I loved it. It just was a kind of lean, sexy look that was completely different from what the Ivy League look was.
I have to admit, this surprises me a little. Not that I expect Bruce to be rigid about his clothing. Not at all. He's totally the opposite. But to be drawn to an opposite at a time before fashions were truly global. I mean, today it's not unusual to have Italian, English, American clothes in your wardrobe and wear them interchangeably. But I certainly had a sense that in the past, things were more partitioned. You know, you were either a mod or you were a rocker. You dressed Ivy or you dressed Italian.
When I was younger, I experimented a lot. And particularly if there was something new out there or something that other people said was a little shocking or, you know, a little different, I would try it. When I changed styles, I changed almost completely when I was young. I didn't just add an element here or there until I had transfigured myself. I think I transfigured myself right away. And did it very, very quickly, if you had seen me on Monday in Ivy League, and by Friday I was continental, the Ivy League was gone. I think that I not only, you know, managed to get a hold of the continental Italian style suit, but I also managed to get a hold of the shirt and the tie and the shoes and everything.
In the last episode, I talked about how I can see aspects of English tailoring in Bruce's wardrobe, in the sharpness around the edges. And I can certainly see the Italian influence in how colorful much of Bruce's clothes is, and how that warm, relaxed approach to clothing merges so well with Ivy League. I just didn't realize it went back to his formative years. And those early influences on him didn't just come from the world of fashion. In fact, they came most strongly from the industry that probably helped promote Italian style best, the cinema.
I had been very impressed by Roberto Rossellini's war trilogy, Rome, Open City, and Paisan, and Germany, Year Zero, I think it was called. And then after that, you got Dolce Vita, and one of my favorite movies, also with Mastroianni, was Divorce Italian Style, which was, I think, 1961.
These films were part of a movement called neorealism that centered on social issues and concerns in post-war Italy. And a lot of the creativity in the films was a necessity of the very society they were commenting on. Like, they didn't have enough money for sound stages or scenery, so they ended up just shooting wherever they could. That ended up giving the films an unintentional documentary-like gritty quality. And then because of using natural lighting and just everyday people on the street, the films looked even more authentic and grainy.
It widened our perspective immensely. I remember a wonderful line that Bob Dylan used, you know, when he first heard Elvis Presley sing. Dylan said it was like being let out of jail. In a way, that's the way we felt about seeing these Italian films and this Italian style. And all of a sudden, there was this world out there that was sophisticated and very smart and sleek. And that was a real watermark for us when Mastroianni replaced the Hollywood stars as a style icon. And along the way, then he was introducing Italian tailoring.
There's a lot I take for granted when I hear those two words, Italian tailoring. Immediately, I think unconstructed jackets that sit close to the body in light or bright colors. You might have some associations as well, stuff you've seen on the streets of Naples or on Instagram. But in Bruce's youth, well, first of all, Italian tailoring was not as tight and close to the body. It wasn't even that lightweight, just lighter than English tailoring. But the color was there. And not only that, the way Italians used color.
I don't think I ever had seen a tan gabardine double-breasted suit until I saw one on Armani. But all of a sudden, a pale blue shirt and a navy silk tie and a tan gabardine double-breasted suit worn with beautiful brown shoes, I mean, that was the mark of elegance and sophistication. So, I mean, everybody wanted to run out and get a tan gabardine suit or something like a very lightweight tropical worsted suit with very small checks, you know, black and white or brown and white, which we had never done before. Never. The importance of the Italian clothing was, I think, there was a subtlety in the cut that I appreciated, but it wasn't so much that. It was more the interest in the texture of fabrics and colors. I never thought about adding that kind of color to business wear and formal wear and tailored dress wear, that kind of thing.
But of course, at that point, Bruce had only experienced Italian style vicariously through film and magazines. As we heard in the last podcast, Bruce went to England in 1963, right after graduating from college. But he also visited the continent on that trip, with a stopover in Italy. Like me, the first place he visited was Milan, And like me, he was surprised not to find the breezy, colorful, laid-back Italy he'd been expecting.
In the north, the Milanese men were very formal and very conservative, and they held themselves very erect, and they walked very quickly, you know, and they wore navy blue suits and dark gray suits and that kind of thing.
That's exactly what I experienced on my first visit to Milan, which was about 50 years after Bruce's trip. And like me, Bruce's visit was mostly a sartorial one, including a trip to one of the city's oldest shirt makers, Truzzi.
And I met the owner, who at that time, his name was Luigi Balini. He spoke English very well, so we had a lovely conversation. And while we were talking, I noticed that over in the corner, there was a gentleman cutting out a shirt on a, you know, like a drafting table. And this gentleman looked like he was about 92 years old. Mr. Balini noticed me looking at him, and he said, that's my father. He said, would you like to meet him? So we went over and he introduced me, and what a gracious, you know, older gentleman. And I said to the son, I said, would you ask him for me what the secret is of cutting a beautiful shirt? So he asked his father, and they chatted for a minute and laughed. And then the son said to me, my father says that the way to cut a beautiful shirt is you have to cut it with love. I did buy a shirt at Truzzi, an off-the-rack shirt, because I was caught up in the romance of it all, you know. I bought a shirt, and it was a wonderful shirt. I mean, they made absolutely gorgeous shirts, and at that time, the prices in Italy were very reasonable. So I bought one or two small things. I was just exploring. I wanted to meet as many tailors and things as I could, and then try to figure out which one might be good for me.
And Bruce did venture south of Milan on that trip, not all the way down to Naples or Sicily, but far enough south to experience a different side of Italy.
By the time you got to Rome and so forth, the pace was different. Men had more of a saunter to them. They didn't walk as quickly, and they dressed differently. They dressed in lighter shades, more light grays and tans and things like that, and with a little more brilliance to their neckwear. One of the things that an Italian fellow that I met that was telling me, he said, you know, the world, he meant Italy, but he said the world, you know, because that's how Italians look at things. The world is not divided between men and women. That's superficial. The world is divided between the shirt maker Battistoni in Rome and the shirt maker Truzzi in Milan. In a way, it was true, because in Rome, Battistoni, they used a lot more brighter fabrics, and they cut the body of the shirt closer, and the collar of the shirt was a little more fashion-oriented. In Milan, the firm of Truzzi was a lot more conservative.
This story comes as no surprise to anyone who spent a fair bit of time in Italy and experienced the remarkable amount of what I'd even call regional hostility. Anyway, Bruce didn't make a deeper sartorial dive into Italy on that trip. That wouldn't come for another decade. But before we get to that, I want you to hear about this week's sponsor. This episode of Unbuttoned is brought to you by Anderson & Shepard. As you heard in the last chapter, Bruce has been buying bespoke clothes from Anderson & Shepard for over 50 years. I myself dream of going one day and getting something made, so I asked Bruce, what should I order?
I would get a medium gray flannel double-breasted suit.
Interesting, but why?
Anderson & Shepard does a wonderful double-breasted. Their lapel is just wide enough, you know, it's not a skimpy little lapel. And they don't cut the lapel straight, they curve it, which I think is much better than a straight lapel. And you can button either the medium or the lower button. I just think it's a wonderful look and very comfortable.
Brilliant. Next time I'm in London, that's what I'll do. And I'd recommend you do the same. But if you're not in London, Check their online trip calendar for Anderson & Shepard's many trunk shows around the world. That's at anderson-shepard.co.uk. And while online, have a look at their shop, carrying a wide selection of shirts, trousers, shoes, knitwear, and accessories. That's anderson-shepard.co.uk. And now back to Bruce. It's 1973, and he's making his next visit to Italy.
I moved very tentatively and cautiously into the world of Italian tailoring, which actually is not like my younger self. My younger self would have said, go crazy, burn your old wardrobe and get this stuff. But I think it does show that I've matured very nicely. Well, I had a pair of trousers made at the foot of Via Monte Napoleone, which was a glamorous street at the time. There was a tailor named Bombino. Unfortunately, it was like 2 days before, no, it was 1 day before I was scheduled to fly back to New York. And I went there in the morning. And I saw trousers that this guy had made, and they were just fabulous. So I said to him, you know, I said, I would love to have you make me a pair of gray flannel trousers. I said, but I'm leaving tomorrow morning. He said, can you come back at 5 o'clock? Now, it was 9 in the morning. He said, I'll have the trousers for you. I couldn't believe it. I went back at 5 o'clock. He had the trousers finished, and they were perfect. I mean, not even a fitting. It was unreal. And they were gorgeous. Now, I have to tell you that that is not necessarily the norm when it comes to Italian tailors. I mean, Italian tailors are perfectly as capable of taking a long time as anybody. But if you're very nice to them, and if they really like you, they can do it.
While on that trip, Bruce also visited Rome.
I can't remember the name of this gentleman, and I maybe wouldn't want to use it anyway, even if I could. But he was considered one of the top tailors in Rome, certainly one of the most expensive. And he told me, because I asked him, I said, you know, who do you make clothes for? And he mentioned a few people, and he had made clothes for Mastroianni and, you know, so forth. But he mentioned the name Berlinger. Now, I don't know if you, well, you may not be old enough to know this, but Mr. Berlinger was the head of the Communist Party in Italy. I said, wait a minute. I said, that doesn't somehow make a lot of sense to me that this guy, you know, head of the Communist Party, would buy clothes from one of the world's most expensive tailors, right? And he said, well, he comes in the back door.
Up until recently, I had no idea that Italy had a powerful communist political movement in the 1970s. I also had no idea of the political violence that was happening there at the time, including assassinations and even bombings. That didn't always involve the communists, but it was an outcome of the struggle between right-wing and left-wing forces. And the communist leader in Bruce's story, Enrico Berlinger, was a huge figure in 70s Italian politics. In fact, his was the largest communist party in the Western world at the time, taking almost 35% of the vote in 1976. And even though he distanced himself from the more extreme views of the Russian Communist Party, it wouldn't have done his cred or his popularity any good if word got out he was buying some of the finest bespoke suits in Italy. I guess you could argue he was supporting artisans. Anyway, after his jaunt through Rome, Bruce finally headed south to the country's tailoring capital of Napoli.
The way that we think about Italians is the way Italians think about Neapolitans. You can't cross the street in Naples without taking your life into your hands.
I just visited Naples for the first time last year, and that is still very true. And not only how dangerous it is to cross the street, but the idea of how we think of Italians. I mean, after a number of visits to northern Italy, I was left wondering, where's all the bravura? Where's all the guys in colorful, stylish clothing? The piazzas filled with people drinking espresso? Yeah, they're in Naples. a city that sits not far from Mount Vesuvius, which is still, believe it or not, an active volcano. In fact, millions of people live in the volcano's red zone.
That was my first indication that these people are a little crazy, you know, because, I mean, you would think, why would you live at the base of a volcano like that? What I found was that there was a great deal more casualness. Now, it was partially that the clothing was a little less constructed and so forth, but I think it was the way that it was worn, that it was worn in a more casual manner. You would see a lot of men who were wearing suits, and they actually wouldn't be wearing the coat. It would be thrown over their shoulders in a kind of a cavalier way. I would think about just a few years after that, I met Mariano Rubinacci, who is someone I love, worship, and adore. He's just the loveliest man, and he has such wonderful style and taste. We've been friends for over 30 years at least, and at first I would just get some ties and things from him, because Rubinacci has always been one of the most expensive tailors in the world. And I guess it makes sense, because he's certainly one of the best clothing houses, you know, in the world.
And it's not just that Rubinacci is one of the best. They are arguably the house that helped invent Italian tailoring as we know it. Back in the 1930s, Mariano's father, Gennaro, started the company and called his shop London House to emulate the home of traditional tailoring. His tailor at the time was Vincenzo Attolini. What Attolini did, and this has become almost Italian menswear legend, was to take apart English tailoring to make it more lightweight for the Italian climate and more streamlined for the Italian sensibility. Even though his jackets were still rather structured by today's Neapolitan standards, they were far, far lighter than what was being made on Savile Row. Eventually, Attolini and Rubinacci went their separate ways, and the company shifted to the new name. But Mariano is still at the helm of the Naples location, as he was when Bruce visited him.
I had picked out some very nice kind of fresco fabric in a charcoal gray, and I told him I wanted a very conservative double-breasted suit. He did a beautiful one for me. I mean, it's just... It's soft and easy, and he always said to me, he said, my father told me that to make a beautiful suit, it should look small on the outside and feel big on the inside. In other words, he wanted to reduce your, if you were heavy or something, you know, he would try to reduce that and give you a smaller silhouette. But it should still feel easy. I've always kind of liked that idea myself. You know, I'm not one to sacrifice comfort to fashion.
It was also on this trip to Italy that Bruce made an observation that would forever change the thinking and vocabulary of the menswear world.
I remember seeing guys in Italy that would wear a very formal suit and then wear an old barber jacket over it. It was as though they just threw it on and it happened to look fabulous. Now, I know they took maybe a couple of hours to figure out, you know, everything, but it just looked so kind of devil may care, whatever you want to say, you know. So it was that purposeful nonchalance, right?
And Bruce found a word for that purposeful nonchalance in Italian, in the works of 16th century writer Baldassare Castiglione.
I think I'm the first fashion writer, or, you know, whatever the hell I am. I'm the first one to use the term sprezzatura. And I can prove that, because I have an article that I wrote in 1973, and I used that term first, and then everybody copied me. Don't get me wrong, I'm not bitter. But, I mean, I think I should have the credit for that. But anyway, yes, I noticed that the Italians were very good at mixing the formal and the casual to get a kind of I don't give a damn attitude, which I loved.
Not just Bruce, the whole world, it seems, is in love with Italy's approach to style. But here's a parting thought that perhaps ties the first three chapters of this podcast series together. It's perfectly logical that Bruce, an Ivy League devotee, would feel a kinship with Italian style, because it's actually the Italians that owe a debt of gratitude, when it comes to style, to Americans. Hear me out. I mean, where did their love of button-down shirts come from, even wearing them with suits? Or their three-button jackets that roll to the second button? Or even the softer shoulders and, I dare say, casual elegance? These are all traits of early 20th century Ivy League. On the next podcast, the fourth piece of the puzzle of Bruce's approach to style, Hollywood. This podcast is a production of the Hogtown Rake. Thanks for listening.